Kia ora tātou. Welcome. Tēnā koe, Rose, our speaker tonight, our wonderful executive member who brings so much to Landmarks. We so look forward to hearing what you've got to say.
Thank you.
We'll let you get on with it.
Thank you. Well, welcome to you all. It's lovely to see you. The Māori history of Hastings. This is very much Hastings. I've tried not to go outside the boundary of Hastings. When we get to it, as we begin anything, when we're Māori talking about this land, Heretonga Aroroa. That's Heretonga of Arcadian pathways. Heretonga Paku Nui. Heretonga of the heavy dews. So the heavy dews means that we get water all the year. Well, we did once. Heretonga Haro Otskahu. Heretonga, the beauty of which can best be seen, really, by the hawk in full flight over the plains. And Heretonga Takatonoa. Heretonga, where the chiefs have departed from in their Arcadian pathways. And that's how we start whenever we talk about Heretonga. So here we are in Heretonga, the plains. You know this well, and we'll see this picture a few other times. So if we go from the rivers, this was actually a delta, this describes it. It's got the rivers coming down and giving us all that water. Well, it did once. Who knows what now? But you're all well familiar with this. So, pre-colonial days, Māori didn't live in Hastings because that was our food supply. So we lived on the hills round about and kept the waters free. So this is Tāne Nui Aorangi. Now that's on the Napier Road where the wool store is. That's Tāne Nui Aorangi. And that was inhabited by the people who were rangatāne. They lived here with us back in the day. And as you can see, they had quite a fortified pā. This is in the Pākawai pā. This is how it was. These are drawings done by colonial artists who came in with the forces. These are two pā sites that you might find interesting. This one here is at the base of Tamata Peak. It's hard actually to see it when you're up there. But this is the Tukituk along here. And that's what I call the Webster's Lime Works over there. And this is Horonui. Many of you familiar with Horonui? First turn on the right when you leave Hastings. And this is an extraordinary pā site. And it's not like one anywhere else in the country because it's on the flat. And you can see the lines here where they're set up. They're ready to have a battle. There's houses and we don't know why it's on the flat. Really unusual. We've surmised about it. Maybe these people were where they hid the old people. And up the top, up here, is a very large pā in the very first Heretonga Wharenui. And that is an enormous hole. It's about 20 feet deep and like from me to Barbara at the back and this size. Maybe they were hiding people in them. Who knows? We were up for lots of people wanting our lands, unfortunately. But we had year-round food. So there we were, happily living here, thinking we were in heaven. Things were pretty quiet. We had odd skirmishes amongst ourselves. Various hapū doing this and brothers and cousins fighting one another. Nothing very serious. And there was a battle held at Rotuatara in 1822. And that was the first time Waikato and Taupō came over and we rebuffed them that time, and they went home with their tail between their legs. But we knew they'd be back, and 2 years later they came back. And they came with guns, and we didn't have guns. So they had the poo, and they shot us out of the water. We had retreated, we knew they were coming. We'd retreated to live on this bit of land here called Pakeke. And that's the name of the battle. This is a sketch by Rhodes done in the 1850s. Now Pakeke is near the Iron Pot and the customs house is probably placed exactly where it was. And all the chiefs that stayed behind went into Pakeke and they were all either taken prisoner or killed or drowned. However, we'd split up. We had a bit of trouble here because Pariehe, who was a chief, said he wasn't going to stay here and wait for them to come and kill us. He lined up with the Ngāpuhi chief, who had guns, and they took a whole lot of people to Ngutarua for safety. They were there for 20 years. We were out of the province for 20 years before we came back. And when he came back, Parahi put all the chiefs back in the places they should have been to start the community again. I often think of those people who bought us, came to live here. They wanted food, of course. But when they got here, you got food. They could get that. But they didn't know how to live off the land. All of you here will know how to live off Hawke's Bay land. What you go to the sea in the summer. In the winter, you can go up the hills and get birds or something. And in between, the chiefs usually had eel weirs. In that wonderful fertile plains, there were eel weirs assigned to every family. So they had food. They had year-round food. Tūwharitoa, Waikatoa, everyone else who came down, they didn't have that. They wanted what we had. But they didn't know how to look after the land. They didn't know how it worked. So in 20 years' time, they'd virtually all gone because we knew how to live on this land, just like you all know how to live on this land now. It's quite different. So he comes back. Parahi takes them up to Pakati. If you are near Key West and you're not far from the Custom House, I was told under those roads is just full of bones. Bones forever under there. So we were decimated, really. I brought this up because as I was researching, I looked at the very first edition of Bay Buzz that came out in 2011. And these were the hazards that were mentioned then in 2011. Look, earthquake, pandemic, well, we've had one of those. We've also had an earthquake. Floods, fire involving hazardous substances. Well, we're waiting for that, we'll probably get it. Electricity failure, well, we got that. Pests, diseases hitting food production or forestry, probably got that happening. Tsunami, well, we're waiting. Rural wildfire, release of hazardous chemicals into the air, and coastal erosion. Well, I'm a bit sorry that more attention wasn't paid to this list, or we wouldn't have suffered so badly last year. So, what happens? We have an earthquake. And I've said this is a personal story, and of course it is. So in the earthquake, it was my mother's first day at school. She lived with her parents in Napier. Her father's half-brother lived on the hills above Havelock, and they sat in those hills and watched the land doing this. They watched the trees hitting either side and watched the waves of land over the plains. Then my uncle thought he'd better go and find his brother and sister-in-law and children. Now, he gives a description, it's not as bad as that, but it felt like that the way he described it when I was little. He had to get across the bridge over the Ngarororo, and he would tell us how he went back and got this farm truck and went flying over and got to us. So that's Uncle Ian that saved us. He got my grandparents, my mother, brought them back to Hastings, where they lived under tents. They were on the tennis court, sleeping in tents. You've seen every other picture of the earthquake. So the floods have been serious here. We've had them often. They're very serious. This is 1885, I think, this one. And this is where the Ngarororo changes its course. It stops going down to Longlands. It goes straight through to Pakuai, floods Pakuai. And comes down, you see, we should have been ready for some of these things, shouldn't we? It's already happening. So who were the founding fathers of Hastings? This one here is my great-great-grandfather, and this is Henare Tamona, his younger brother. They were the two men who went to court in 1866 and claimed the ownership of the Haratonga Plains. When they got to court, they said through our whakapapa, they had different fathers. We have the right to all of that land. And they were told, oh, but you've got to bring eight others in. We had a 10 grantee rule. So eight others came in and joined and got on the piece of paper, at which Karaitiana said, well, can they sell without us? Oh, the judge said, no, they can't. But guess what they did? And we lost it. So they wanted settlers. They were very keen. They knew what was coming. He had started a school in 1857. There was a school at Pakuai. That headmaster, when he left there, went and taught at Havelock Primary. And Henare started Te Wānanga, which was local newspaper, giving Māori stories and everything. And they were both members of the upper house and both became members for Eastern Māori. Not at the same time. Henare took over when Kraitiana died. But there weren't just two founding fathers, there's four. So we've got Thomas Tanner, of which a lot has been talked about and whatever. We have Tanner Street in Havelock. It wasn't always Tanner Street either. Somebody felt kindly towards him. He was a Russian bust man. We have James Nelson Williams. We've got a descendant or two here, I think. So they're apostles. We've all heard about the apostles. There weren't 12 of them. There were 7. And look at the land block. You can see they're dividing up the Heratonga block between them. Wasn't always a successful division of what went on here. The railway line had gone through, so they were pretty pleased with this. Tanner had to give up some of his land because Karamu, the block near Waipatu, was set aside for Māori. Out of every block of land that was taken, there was a tenth given back for a reservation. You hear of the tenths in Wellington. There were tenths here in all the lands. So this is what became the settlement of Karamu. Here's Williams in Frimley. And we know about Williams and Frimley. He had 60 miles of fruit trees, didn't he? 60 miles of fruit trees, apple trees. Ormond got a smaller section. Two Russells are in this. Most people here are descended from the Russells. They were a bit argumentative because they were never quite satisfied with what they got. So some of them went to live out. Anyway, that's Flaxmeland. Gordon, who actually got kidnappers, but he went into a syndicate with Hill. So that's at Green Meadows around there. Anyway, that's Hastings. And so it was 16,000 acres. They paid to get it through because the courts didn't know what to do about this. And Māori had been forced by debt to pay for this. The 8 people that they didn't want in had run up debts and whatever and bought alcohol and goodness knows. Anyway, it got silly. So they actually ended up paying £21,000 for the land. They were only paying £4,000 a year rent, and they didn't like having to pay Māori rent, so they got a bit of whatever, and they thought, we won't do that, we'll take it through the courts. Well, they would have been cheaper actually paying the $4,000 a year, and then they would have had the land anyway. So it cost them dearly. So, of course, we lost our land, so we're pretty crabby about that. Really crabby, actually. This is a man called David Tippany Leach. You might know of him. He is descended from Henry Matua. It's this man here. I'm descended from this one, and this is Russell. I told you the Russells were popping around every now and again. So Russell, and I think this is Purvis, joined with Māori to complain about what was happening on the plains. Man here is John Sheehan. He was the first New Zealand born Member of Parliament. Crytown is getting a bit weary of what's going on here, so he makes John Sheehan executor of his estate. Doesn't leave it to his brothers or his nephews. He had a 9-year-old son he left it to. Anyway, they started this movement, which is when they got the Te Wānanga going. So David's managed to keep all his papers left to him by Henare. We've lost ours, earthquakes, fires and everything else. We don't have much left. So David's very big on the repudiation movement and what went on. Kraitiana gets into power and he insists on investigation into what had happened, which they did. They ran it. They had 2 Pākehā and a Māori on it and heard it. It went for, I think they heard for over 6 months. But all this causes friction. You know, if you get Māori coming to court and talking, they don't live nearby. They live somewhere else. They have to come to town. There's nowhere to stay in town. People don't want them. They don't want these people sitting around in the streets who don't have a house to live in. So there was a start of a Māori club. I don't know if any of you heard of this. It was on the Marine Parade near what I call the False Teeth. You know that roundabout, the False Teeth? Well, in there, there's flats, I think it's called Ranui, which I'm sure, quite sure, is where the Māori club was. It had 16 bedrooms. You know, it was based on what they do over in the Hawke's Bay Club. So people could stay. They do the same there now. So they had their investigation, and a lot turned out to be fraud and this, that, and the next thing. I'm going to read something now, because although they had the investigation said there were no permanent provision for economic future, purchase prices were inadequate, reserves not allowed or inadequate, reserves not secured from alienation, no access to natural resources, no proper inquiry into customary ownership, no independent counsel for Māori, no obligations as far as the treaty is concerned, and the selling of land forever was not investigated. And Māori didn't understand that selling of land, because they thought the land was still there, and it was, it was different. So no further action happened from that. It was a real downer to the local people. But we have some other skirmishes going on, because we like getting active about things and sorting things out. We had another battle in 1857 at Pakiaka. That's at Whakatū, near where Rangatahi Street used to be. You go to the back of Whakatū and come out and you come into something that's now called Hawea Park. There was an urupa where the people who died are there. But that was basically Ngāti Kahununu, us, me, and the Whatui Apiti people, of which the head was Hapuku. And Hapuku, we thought, had been very naughty because he'd gone to Wellington and sold people's land and didn't tell them he'd sold their land and things. So there was great resentment building. In the end, people will tell you it was just a fight over a bit of bush. The Crichtowner owned the bush and he didn't want Hapuku going and doing something with the trees, so they called a fight. It went for 3 days. They weren't continuous days. They seem to have taken a couple of days off before they started the fight again. And if Pākehā were coming along, they'd say to them, "Oh, stop the fight, you can go through." It was quite good. In the end, Hapuku's brother-in-law, Puhara, was killed, and that settled the score. So Hapuku had to move. They said they didn't want him down on the plains with them anymore. He had to go. But we're dealing with Donald McLean, which is always a bit tricky dealing with Donald McLean. And McLean had to get him off. So it took 6 months before Hapuku left. And when you read through the documents, you can work out that he left, but he got £400 to go. Well, you can imagine what the chief said about that. "We've just won the battle and you gave him £400. So they wanted £400 too. And McLean had to pay. When you read the documentation on Tamata Peak, it sold 3 times. It's quite good. Ōmiranui, next battle, 1866. Te Kōti, he's coming down through Wairoa. There's murdering and nastiness. I won't go into, I don't know, I wasn't there. I can't say much. But they were coming down and threatening Napier. They didn't have enough people in Napier to form any sort of defence force. So they ended up arming Māori. We were given guns to go and fight with the Pākehā to protect the Napier citizens. And for that, we were called kūpapa. Does anyone know what that means? Traitor. So just, I like to tell people this, that we have put up with that from other tribes because we fought to keep settlers here. That's a soapbox and a half, isn't it? In 1911, bless their hearts, a Women's Christian Temperance Society. You know, there's quite a lot of alcohol going on. And on my father's side, this is his grandmother, and she was quite keen on money. She actually owned the pub in Woodville. I don't know, was paying a debt or something. And her son used to just take the pony trap up and just fill it up with beer. She didn't approve at all. So the Women's Christian Temperance Society started. Here she is. They're coming from Pakipaki. They've come to town. You can see she's got the pram and the goods. They would have had to be up very early to do this in 1911, in August. This is her husband, Mohi Te Ataikoia. And here's Bishop Bennett. And I don't know who the others are. It's a significant movement. So what's going on? We've got the Williamses and the Orchardists having a fabulous time with the best land in the country, the best apple land. Can I tell you, last night I was at a meeting with some people from Mr. Apple who were telling us it's the best land in Hawke's Bay to grow apples. And I know that because I remember when we negotiated with Te Arakahi Ka Te Road, John Painter, Paul Painter, John, father, had been around the world looking at soils and whatever. In fact, Paul had bought up leases on the 1943 soil things that were done, where the great soils were. And they still have a lot of those lands, but didn't buy them all, a lot of them are leased. We lease some of ours to them. But who's going to pick all this fruit? They didn't have them coming over from the islands then. So they were Māori who didn't live in Hastings. They lived outside of Pakipaki or Mahu or Waimarama or somewhere. They were coming in to do the picking. Not only were they picking, they were doing watties and the shearing sheds. And I think they're the unrecognised Māori workers. That Hastings really lived on their work. I don't think Māori actually wanted to come and live in Hastings anyway. They were quite happy where they were. But the shortage of workers is something that happened back then. I don't know, some of you might remember, they used to try and change the school academic year so that the kids could go and pick apples. They're still trying. Well, there you go. That hasn't stopped. I've said enough on that one. This is the First World War. This man, I think, is the most beautiful Māori man I've ever seen, so I have to put him in a picture whenever I get the opportunity. His name is Henare Kōhere, and he's not even from here. He was in the second Māori contingent, and he was killed in France in 1916. But this photograph sits at Hongaria Marae, and I don't know why they have it, but they let me photograph it, and I use it because I think he's beautiful. But what a waste. What a terrible waste. This man here is my grandfather. He was brought up by his mother and stepfather, and he'd been to Whanganui Collegiate as Michael Simpson, but somewhere along the line he wanted to be Māori again, so he became Te Kōrero Karaitiana. And he had a commission into the RAF. It cost £100, which was quite a lot of money then, to train to fly. By the time he got to England, the war was over, but he had quite a good time. And I've heard from his cousins that were in London, the war. He'd say to them, do you want to come for a spin? Oh yeah, he'd take them up on a plane and do loop-to-loops over London. I don't know who else knew about that, anyway. So what happened after that? Well, we know what happened after that. This is the Hastings Emergency Hospital. This was put together by my grandfather's stepfather, because he was mayor of Hastings at the time. Horace Simpson. There's a lovely Lindell print of him in the council chambers. Very handsome. I can see why she married him. It was her second marriage. So these are the people that ran that. 91 people died in Hastings from the flu and 73 in Napier. There were large numbers of Māori who died, but they were never recorded. I know there are some at Pakipaki and they were just popped in the ground. So it was pretty decisive. But if you live in Havelock, I'll tell you, nobody in Havelock died. Falcon was living in Havelock then, and Falcon knew about isolation, so we escaped. Now we go to World War II. This is my father, Bill Morhe, and this is his friend, Henare Marsden. They went into officer training at the beginning of the war. My father wasn't very good at staying home or being in time, and he didn't complete the course. So by the time the war started properly, he went in as a private, but got promoted on the field. This man became a major. This is my grandfather who went flying loop-de-loops over London. When they started the 28 Māori Battalion, they went looking for some officers. There were only four in the country, and he was asked to sign up. He was probably too old, really. So he did sign up, and he was in training in Trentham, and he saw action overseas, which he hated, and came back shell-shocked. Too old. But there were only four of them, and they needed a whole battalion. So what happened in Hastings? This is a picture I love, and I had an old auntie, Ponga Chadwick, who once got me to write down on a piece of paper some of their names. These are the queens. These are the great women of Heratonga. It's all the great families represented here. And they're doing a poi in the waka. I don't know what year, and I haven't dated it or anything, but if you look at the clothes, we're in the 40s, 50s. Economic destruction. Well, that's the closing of the freezing works. The implication of the freezing works closing, I wasn't living here at the time, I was over in Australia, but I would hear about it. And I hadn't realised the significance. But when we did our research for our treaty settlement, and our research was done by Crown Forestry Rental, well, they paid for it, and the man who looked into this issue, when he came to talk to us and report on what he had found, he apologised to us. He'd known about it, but never realised how serious this was on the men. These were skilled men, turfed off, back home, nowhere to go, no work. Many of them took to alcohol and many others just faded away. Suicides too. However, things get better. They do get better. We have a fabulous mayor who suddenly said, put all these carvings in the civic square. And we did. We got carvers down. So these carvers, there's 18 here, and you all know them quite well. And they're all looking at their own marae. And they're fairly well related. So this is Karaitiama here. He's a member of parliament, so he's got a scroll and a sword. And his son is underneath, my great-grandfather. What else happened? After 20 years, I've got back here by then, and I think I'd better get into this treaty stuff. I think we lost a lot. So we started off as He Tua Takitini. I mean, all of us together. We're very keen to be all together, always are. And that's what we called when we were doing our investigation. Then after we'd signed, we became Heritonga Tamate Settlement Trust. That's a terrible long name. And we went to Parliament, and this is us in Parliament. When we go down to the signing, it was the biggest signing they'd had of people in the Parliament. And my dear friend Robert MacDonald was making some statement, and I'd driven down with him. Well, his niece had driven us. And suddenly he's scuffling in the back of the car, and he brings out a big poster. And he's handwritten on it all the things he doesn't like that are going on, bless his heart. And he was doing it on the forecourt and had to be told, no, get off, you go down there. Bless his heart, he always had a point like that. Here we have Jerry Harpooku and Liz Munro, who saw us through this terrible process. Anyway, we got there. So PSGE means Post-Settlement Governance Entity. And then we decided to call ourselves Tamate Pōkai Whenua. Well, it's not a lot better, but we all know who he is and we descend from him. We settled a bit earlier than we should have. We probably could have got more than 100 million, but we settled early. And we didn't go to hearings or anything. But Tainui and Ngātahu had already got children. 20 years they were ahead of us. Their kids were coming out of universities and ours had barely got to kōhanga. It was just time we moved on. Oh, we have Waitangi Day now. I didn't go this year. Busy doing this. So when I say that Sandra has made a huge difference to Hastings as far as Māori are concerned, and I'm very proud of her for that, and I think she puts up with me too. I thought I'd tell you some of these organisations you mightn't know about. This is the Māori Land Court on the corner of Eastbourne and Market. So you're sort of in the courts here and the police, but all our records are kept here. Now during the earthquake, Napier's records were lost, Hastings kept theirs. So they're very valuable records, but really they're just a way of taking your land from you now, so it's all the same thing. The Tai Whenua. You've probably heard people talking about they're going to the Tai Whenua, and when you drive down the expressway and you're in Omahu Road, you can see all that car park with all those cars. Well, that's this, the Tai Whenua. This organisation provides health services for Māori. But I think anyone can go, really. I don't know. So they have those large buildings opposite the Knowledge Bank. It's Mr. Knowledge Bank. There he is. This is opposite you. They have mental health services. They have doctors available. And the health's better. And these are the two lovely women you'll see when you walk in the door. Look what else we got. Why, Aroha. Last year, year before. So we're celebrating, we got all sorts of new things. We got a new leader, Baden Barber. Jerry Harpook is here, and here we have more Mormons, of course. Kotuku, and my cousin and I are there. We wear those blue scarves if you've ever wondered why. Many tribes and people around the country, or iwi, have a different colour for what they wear. Well, because we're people from the sea and we associate very heavily with the sea, we wear this like a power shell in our scarves. So when you see us in those, we're off doing important things. Hui. Nga te kahununu. Well, this is our main office. Now, you won't find it because it's buried down somewhere two floors up. But this is Ruth Wong. If you go up on the desk, she's fabulous. She will help you. But here are our chiefs. In there are all our chiefs. Oh, there's my great-grandmother. They're all here. This is a special picture. I wonder who it is. I did some research in a book on orchards, and I came across this picture at the back. I hope you all recognise Barbara, who's having a conniption at the back there. A younger, happy Barbara. And I really want to pay tribute to you, Barbara, and all the work you've done with Landmarks. She is so helpful to us. She does all the typing out and all the records. I mean, we've got Teresa now too. But Barbara holds us together. She even lets us meet in her house. And even my dog's allowed in the house. The extraordinary lengths she goes to. And Murray's our treasurer, and if he can't do the books, she'll do them for him. So I want to say we appreciate everything you do, Barbara.
Thank you so much, Rose. I think that was absolutely fabulous, a beautiful weaving together of your personal history and the history of your family and all the people in your life and the general history of Hastings. So thank you for sharing that with us. Thank you.